Let's talk digital.
We are at the cutting edge of digital tweaks, changes, transformation.
A local digital marketing podcast.
Conversing with industry experts and getting excerpts about the exceptional.
Hosted by Audrey Naidu.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation.
I'm really looking forward to what's coming up in South Africa in the next couple of months and years. How's it, everyone? Welcome back to this week's episode with me, Audrey Naidu. Today we are firing it up as you are in for a sizzling hot treat. Let's give a warm welcome to Doug Place, Chief Marketing Officer at Nando's Africa, Middle East and South Asia. He is responsible for all components of the marketing function for more than 400 restaurants in 13 countries. Joining him is Darren Hampton, GM for Digital Marketing and E-Commerce at Nando's. Welcome to the podcast, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Thank you. Nice to be here. Nice to be called a gentleman.
Doug, I'm going to start with you. You have won over 100 international and national marketing advertising awards. Last year, you were named the most admired marketing professional in South Africa. When you are not winning awards, you are a musician, a photographer, and devoted to the Proteas. Please share your success story with us.
Oh, wow. I think you just did. I'm really lucky. I've got to work with very clever people like Darren and many, many others. And you know, marketing as a discipline is something I really love it. It's always fresh and interesting, and there's no better place in the world, I think, to really practice the discipline or the profession of marketing like South Africa, because you know we're dealing with so many conflicting cultures and emerging trends all of the time that the ability to position a brand like Nando's in the sea of uncertainty is a rare privilege and one I really enjoy. So the prizes and the applause and those things are, I think, more enjoyed by my mom and my wife than by me. For me, they really are, I suppose, a byproduct of getting to do what I love to do every day. So, thank you for a very flattering introduction.
I think when you're passionate about something, then you don't realize you're doing a job. You're actually living your passion.
Sure. Look, there are days where the job is like head-bangingly difficult, for sure. But that's the joy, man. If it was easy, anyone would do it. And it probably wouldn't be as interesting as it is.
Exactly. Darren, I noticed that you and Doug share some history together. Both of you were at Ster Kinneco and now at Nando's. Is this sheer coincidence?
Well, it's, it's the natural progression, you know, from movies to chicken in terms of your career. There's coincidence in that. But, I've been very, very privileged to work with Doug for about a decade. As we've navigated the nuances of South Africa together, but I think it's rare to find a team combination where there's a level of trust and you just kind of know what the different skill sets are, and when it works, it works.
And when you are not working, you are busy playing the guitar, drums, renovating houses, and looking after a one-year-old. Where do you find the time?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It's easy to put those things down on a bio, but the reality of doing all of those things and finding time to do them is a lot harder. It's certainly after the birth of my little guy, my little son.
Thanks, guys, for that awesome intro. Now let's get down to our topic for today. Doug, when the announcement was made in March with regards to Level 5 lockdown, what was the impact to your business and your customers?
We're lucky in that Nando's is a multinational brand, so we operate in more than 23 countries around the world. So we had sort of seen the coronavirus story unfolding from January, actually. And then as it became more than just, you know, an isolated Chinese news story and became a the global phenomenon that it is, we had seen, you know, firsthand that a lockdown was going to be the most likely course of action. What we didn't know was when or how severe. And of all of those 23 countries, South Africa took the fastest and most severe lockdown as it relates to restaurants, our business. In most of the rest of the world in which we operate, we could still trade with off-premise, you know, consumption like, you know, delivery or drive-throughs or the like. So you could still keep part of the business alive. Whereas in South Africa, we weren't allowed to trade at all. So the economic impact of that is devastating, because you know you have all of the costs. You still want to pay people their salaries. You still want to settle your accounts with your suppliers. You want to look after as many things that are fundamental to who we are as a business as we possibly can. And there's not one rand hitting the till. We're really fortunate in that we have incredibly generous and forward-thinking shareholders. We're a privately held business, so we're quite shy about our results. We've taken a long-term view, which was, if we look back on this time, as many of us will, what are things we want to be proud of? And we wanted to be proud of, the way in which we handled this, rather than, all of the profit being, we could possibly protect. So as a business, we, agreed to pay all of our employees their full salaries. There were some salary sacrifices which were voluntary from an executive perspective. But that also created sizable enough, resources to be able to continue to pay all of our suppliers, negotiate fairly with all of our landlords, and keep out as many of our employees, safe as possible when they need resources now more than ever. So that's a very expensive decision. It's an easy one to make, but a hard one to live with, as I think I said in the meeting to you earlier this week. And from a, an online perspective, what we saw almost immediately, and Darren can talk to this in more detail, was not only were people concerned that they couldn't have the world's best flame grilled peri peri chicken for, at the time we didn't know it was going to be as long as it was. We assumed, like most South Africans, it would be a 4-week lockdown, and it turned into almost a 3-month lockdown from our perspective. We only reopened for dine-in trade on Monday, so 2 days ago. And a lot of the commentary we had online was for people to say, please, we know you can't do business, but please don't go away. We love who you are as a brand. We love hearing from you. We love talking to you. And so it wasn't ever going to be a difficult decision, but we wanted to keep present and stay with people as a proudly South African brand. More than ever, we wanted to be with the people in this time. And even though we couldn't sell them their favorite food, we could still share their experiences with them in whatever online way we could.
Doug, from a marketing perspective, how has this impacted marketing? Because the reason why I'm asking this is a lot of brands, we've seen a halt and a pause to all marketing efforts. What did you do during this time?
I can't speak for other brands, but like most businesses, there has been an enormous pressure on cash flow. And one of the things which you can do quite quickly is to turn off, advertising and marketing and preserve fairly significant cash flow. And I'm not saying that's a good or a bad decision, but it wasn't necessarily a decision we wanted to make. Nando's has always been a brand which zigs when others zags, and certainly from a restaurant perspective, most of the South African restaurant story is about, multinational brands coming here, particularly American brands. And Nando's has always been, since 1987, it's been a story about a brand that originated here and then went to the rest of the world, and not vice versa. So it's in our DNA to do things, I suppose, contrary to trend. Whilst, we had to make certain, media decisions. It was, for example, largely pointless to have a big, outdoor campaign when people weren't allowed outdoors. Mm. So that's just a pragmatic decision. But that doesn't mean we turn off marketing. So we've had a very proud online presence. So we doubled down our efforts there, very fundamentally. And so, being able to, we put together a dictionary. We wanted to call it the COVID dictionary, but we couldn't call it that because you couldn't use the word COVID on social media. It's sort of flagged as potential fake news. So we called it lockdown lingo. And, with a lot of South Africans, found new vocabulary to describe the lockdown state that most South Africans were in. And what that does is it creates a sense of shared history and shared empathy that, we're also locked down. We also miss being with, our customers and being with our, broader social networks and our broader communities. And, everything from that to, how can we possibly help? So we've teamed up with the President's Solidarity Fund. We did some really, and continue to do some really interesting work with them in terms of, helping them get their key messages out, but also, raising much needed funds for them so that they can, look after particularly vulnerable communities. So what we have is a very engaged audience, and what they have is a very serious network that allows to address the most acute problems faced by society as a result of the coronavirus. And then we also, interestingly, and we worked with a couple of other restaurant brands in just, you know, discussing with government what we think the various protocols could be in terms of operating in a safe way and, you know, to reopen the economy such that we don't make what is already a devastating, you know, health pandemic, and, you know, a catastrophic economic situation as well. So we were very involved with the Consumer Goods Council, the Restaurant Association of South Africa, various franchising bodies, and all of them had very similar challenges to us. And so we said, well, you know, we can't open to the public, but we can, you know, what we do for a living is cook brilliant food, and we cook it really safely. So we started it's kind of been known now as the Frenemies campaign, although that wasn't the public name for it. But, you know, with KFC and McDonald's in particular, we cooked all of the food that we had in our restaurants that we couldn't sell to the public, and then distributed that with the help of Joint Aid Management, JAM, to the most, you know, vulnerable communities across South Africa. And, you know, we watched with dismay, like many people, the news feeds of, you know, 2 or 3 long kilometer queues where people can't social distance adequately just so they can go and get food. And so we wanted to kind of rally to that cause. So we set aside any differences we may have had as brands, and that created some lively internet conversation as well. And, you know, we fed, you know, a couple 100,000 people over the period of 2 or 3 weeks. And, you know, this is an ongoing story. We're still looking for further opportunities to be a brand that really shows up when many other brands, to your question, have disappeared.
Yeah, no, I think that is very commendable. And in terms of brands standing up for social causes instead of, you know, profitability, like you rightly said. I just want to talk to Darren now in terms of digital and pivoting to digital during this time. And I think briefly we spoke about Nando's introducing Nando's curbside during level 4. Darren, you want to give us some insight into this?
Yeah, sure. I think during the time of uncertainty and I suppose a bit of flux, to Doug's point, you know, as a business, you're looking for any opportunity to try and maintain your cash reserve. So if that meant changing the way that you previously did things, then if it was worth it, so be it. So I think, like a lot of brands, we went through a period of 2 years worth of innovation within a space of 3 months. And curbside was certainly on our radar as a potential feature that we could add on to the Nando's application, which we launched a couple of years ago. I suppose COVID helped us make that decision for us, in that it was born out of necessity rather than luxury. So the decision that we had to make was, how do we introduce a new channel that I suppose eases people's anxiety around ordering food? So it gives people the ability to order food in a contactless manner, which was, I suppose, the worry at the time, and to a degree still is at the moment. The decisions we had to make, I think, were around the trade-off between speed and craft. And a feature can be the world's greatest feature that nobody else has ever done, or it can be a functional feature that that helps both the customer and the business. And the decision to get that out faster than it took to time to create the real craft of it was something that we took into account. So we got it out, and it's been really successful since launch. It's amazing how, you know, as marketers, you often think you have to explain every single step of the journey to audiences, but people, you know, pick things up very quickly. And that's certainly the case for curbside, where it became a big portion of business for a lot of restaurants.
Yeah, and retailers too. I mean, consumers were taking on to online delivery, whereas previously we've seen a slow adoption to e-commerce in South Africa. COVID kind of fast-tracked that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we call it, it's a massive sampling drive for e-commerce in South Africa. I think we were sitting at below 2% of total retail sales within South Africa being online. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's jumped to north of 6-7% over this period.
I'm sure it has.
I actually want to now talk about e-commerce again, and how Nando's use technology to propel your e-commerce efforts.
Yeah, so everyone has an app nowadays, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But we started our e-commerce journey about 3 years ago. And whilst many brands were already playing in that space, particularly around delivery, a lot of the pizza brands were, we were fairly late to the game, but for good reason. Our efforts and our attention were focused on grilling delicious flame-grilled peri-peri chicken and serving that in the best possible way in our contemporary African environment. And that's been the success of the brand globally for the last 30 years. So, you know, any distraction from that, needs a real business case for it. So we intentionally didn't play in that space. But there was certainly a move towards more convenient formats and ways to get you your food. And the growth of e-commerce certainly started to show in the South African numbers. About 3 years ago, we were probably less than 1% of all our retail sales as a country were done online. Whereas now, that number has more than trebled. And with COVID specifically, I wouldn't be surprised if that number is closer towards 6-7% of total sales. So, you know, e-commerce is definitely growing in South Africa. And the reason for introducing our own platform is that, A, we can ensure that the experience of Nando's is maintained even when you're not at a Nando's. So whilst the online journey is not the same as being in a restaurant, there are things that we can control to keep that kind of brand experience across. So that was kind of the one rationale. The other side of it was, we can control the experience throughout. So not only the user experience online, but also from our delivery drivers, who the people are, making sure that it's the right caliber of people, because the people component is a massive part of the brand and a massive part of the journey. So that was the other side of it. I think the benefit of having your own platform is, it not only is a transactional platform, but it's also a media channel. So whilst we spend, and a lot of brands spend a lot of money on US-based social channels, like Google, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, the likes, having an audience on your own platform allows you to talk to a base of people in the way that you want to without paying somebody else to broadcast that for you. So there were lots of pros for bringing in our own e-commerce platform, and it continues to be a big part of our business now.
Darren, and we spoke earlier around social media and how do you actually structure for success, because there's the community managers and then there's your social media content and the agility of actually reacting in real time to politics, to news, anything that's relevant and contextual during that time. What is your secret to success?
I suppose highlighting a secret to success indicates that you've mastered it, and we certainly haven't. I think we're learning and discovering new things every day, and COVID is no exception for that. But I think things that have helped us certainly are the type of partners that you have on board. So a lot of focus is put on profiling the creative director and the ECDs of an agency, and the support staff, if you want to call it in quotes, is an add-on to that. But for us, it's certainly the other way around, in that we spend as much time and energy and focus on who the personnel is behind community management, because that's the voice of the brand within the channel. And the beauty of social media is that it's allowed us and allowed all brands to talk with people as opposed to broadcast to people, which is more of your traditional media channels. So that's a very important part of it. So we're very involved in who we get on board. I think the idea of having to approve and process and having formal structures in how you go about deploying creative needs to kind of go out the window, and there's a level of like instantaneous that spontaneity that you have to have within the team. So, and again, that highlights the importance of the type of people that you have. You know, it's a very intuitive type of role. So that's important. And how do you enable the team to be able to do what they do best? And as a marketer, sometimes get out of the way of that, or just guide the team in terms of what the brand stands for and what the brand doesn't stand for. So those are, I suppose, the two things that stand out for me. COVID, to Doug's point, the fact that COVID and the situation and how people were feeling was changing on a daily basis, it was very difficult to try and create long-term campaigns under those circumstances. And that's where the beauty of community management comes into play, and that it by nature of it, it changes, you know, within the hour. So by focusing more time and effort on that, you're able to adapt to that change and to you know, weave what conversation you get involved in and decide on how the brand is portrayed.
Darren, I just wanted to touch on what you said about Nando's mastering social media, and I think you guys have got it right. In terms of using an example, I mean, on Sunday we've heard the president put a ban on alcohol, but you guys were fast on social media. You actually came back with a social media post or campaign. Do you want to take us through that?
Yeah, sure. It caught me off guard as well. So sadly, I hadn't restocked my cupboard, so I felt it certainly. But yeah, I think we got a note, obviously, as all of us did, that the president was going to address the nation that evening. So we obviously got the team together and actual options that we could go with based on what the assumptions were. Alcohol ban was something that that was forecasted to be addressed, but also the reality of the climbing numbers in terms of the infection rate. The president gave us an update on where the health department is with regards to hospital beds, and I think the situation, you know, is certainly very real for a lot of people. So we knew that a lot of people were going to be watching, and that it was certainly going to be a talking point. What that talking point was going to be, obviously, we didn't know. So as he was going through, we always try and look at kind of what is the mood that is being reflected, and what can each of us South Africans agree on. And certainly the limiting of alcohol was always going to be a big talking point. But, you know, if you look back at the numbers as to what Cyril was talking about, you know, with infection rates of, you know, north of 15,000 to 18,000 records a day, which is massive, just the numbers behind the reality and the seriousness of the situation was very sobering. So that, together with the obvious implications of banning alcohol, meant that there was a nice opportunity for us to have a bit of a play on words around the idea of sobering as the one feeling that everybody felt. It's often there's a tendency to try and overcraft a piece of comms, but we felt that often the less said, the more impactful it said. So we went out with a piece of comms that evening, and it was really well received.
So I'm on this digital group. As soon as the post came out, this was on the group, and two things the guy said was brilliant, and Nando's remain undefeated.
Sadly, I'm not invited to that group, so that's another discussion. We're not on the same WhatsApp group, so I've got serious FOMO. But yeah, I'm glad. Sometimes they stick, and you know, for every piece, I think there's an assumption that every piece of comms that we do, you know, it hits the mark. But the reality is that for every, you know, five pieces we create, you know, one is really the one that stands out, and people remember that one as opposed to those that don't, which is fortunate. And I think that it gives you, I suppose, peace of mind to have a bit of fun and just to play without the risk of upsetting too many people. So I'm glad that worked.
Yeah, you mentioned you guys got together. So this was on Sunday. When did you start the planning process?
Well, a little caveat. When I say get together, obviously responsibly with yes. Social distancing in mind.
No, I know what you mean.
As we're forced
exactly.
to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think not that long before. I mean, the announcement was made that morning. So that's when we kind of flagged it internally to say, hey, this is coming. And, you know, the amount of kind of desktop research that you can do between when he actually announced versus when they announced at the time is all that you can actually prepare for. The rest is just making sure that everybody is in line with kind of what the brand stance is on a particular topic, and that the guardrails or the bowling lanes are very clear, because then you can filter out what is not necessary and really channel your energy on something that everybody's on the same page about.
So that would be like a few hours turnaround time on getting this out.
Yeah.
Doug, how do you ensure, you know, from a brand perspective, that your brand voice is always consistent?
I think it's easier, perhaps, if you're a brand like Nando's, which is, it's like the voice of the average South African, which is, it's not one thing, it's lots of things, and it's fairly, you know, contextually dependent. You know, and we try to put it through a very simple filter, which is it slick, is it smart, is it funny, and is it South African? And if it doesn't meet those criteria, then we just don't say it. And I think what a lot of brands get wrong is they are more interested, I suppose, in appearing formal and professional than they are in appearing human. And when it comes to conversations online in particular, and there was actually a really nice article published about us a couple of days ago without any bribery or solicitation from us, around the way in which, you know, Darren and his team in particular do community management online, which is, you know, it's not that the customer is always right, but the customer is always human, which means they, you know, they make mistakes too. And, you know, they are prone to error, as are we. And I think because of the humanity of our tone of voice, it does create a degree of familiarity and therefore trust, as opposed to a lot of other brands, and in particular, big institutional brands like telecoms or banks or financial institutions, who want to come across as, you know, a professional in a suit and tie when they're dealing with the public, which isn't like that at all. And so being able to kind of bridge that empathy with the, you know, the human experience in all of the, you know, the frivolous things that we laugh about and the serious things that we worry about, gives us a degree of flexibility that allows us to speak to a context, but also, to your point, a degree of consistency, which is, you know, we're a brand that grills things for a living, and, you know, sometimes you're going to get your fingers burnt, and that's okay. And risk tolerance isn't, you know, it isn't important, but it's mandatory. Like, if you aren't prepared to take a risk, then it's very hard to move a brand or a business or even a society forward. So, man, yeah, we definitely make mistakes fairly regularly. And ironically, it's because we're human that we're more likely to, I suppose, be forgiven for those mistakes. If you look at the massive challenges facing Clover, for what I personally think is a huge error in judgment and some pretty poor marketing thinking. I mean, there's potential for something good in that campaign. Because they don't have that, you know, consistent, you know, tone of voice and, you know, relationship with the, you know, the broader public, what was a confusing piece of, you know, marketing collateral from them has now become a fairly painful piece of marketing collateral for them. And I think that potentially can be avoided by many, many brands. So I suppose to answer your question, consistency really is important, but I think humanity is far more important than consistency. You know, at the end of the day, we are working alongside, working with, and working for people. And that matters a lot more than, you know, making sure that the rules of the marketing textbook are expertly applied in every single context.
Nando's does something that other brands often fail to do, is put the customer first from a marketing perspective. And that can go wrong. I mean, especially now you mentioned Clover. I mean, it's a recipe for disaster if they didn't actually consider the customer. But if you suddenly pop up something that the customer is not expected from your brand, obviously you're going to get a reaction from them.
Sure. I mean, we do unexpected things all the time for customers. It's not a case of, you know, being boring and predictable. I mean, a couple of years ago, we had a campaign called hashtag Write My Name, which was a software solution to non-English names. I mean, that couldn't be further from what we sell for a living. But what it really addressed was a fairly painful reality for most South Africans whose names aren't Doug and Darren, that when they type their name into a piece of software, and this is a digital show after all, that they get a red line underneath it, much like Nando's gets the red line and our signature ingredient, Peri Peri, also gets the red line. So there's a degree of legitimacy in terms of what that program is about. But, you know, it's what that stands for that really matters, which is we, you know, are not victims of our circumstances. We can take a certain degree of responsibility over it and we can make things better. And we don't do it in a sanctimonious, self-righteous, chest-beating way. We wanted to do it, to my point earlier, in a way that was slick and smart and South African and funny. And as a result of that, people really responded to that. And they responded so well that it became more than just a South African campaign. We then rolled it out in Botswana and India and Bangladesh and other Nando's territories, which, you know, are not, you know, Anglo-Saxon, you know, name dominant.
So how do you take, how did you take a concept like that and make it localized for your other in-country markets?
Well, the insight was the same, which is that, you know, unless you, like less than 5% of the world have traditional English names, and yet most of the software suppliers are, you know, American. So, you know, the Googles and the Amazons and the Microsofts of the world. There's a mismatch between, I suppose, the cultural reality of most people and where the software originates from. And that's true everywhere, whether your name is Sandile or your name is Pravesh. So it didn't require a huge degree of localization because the insight is the same everywhere. We just used, you know, for example, you know, Cyril Ramaphosa, his first name isn't Cyril, it's Matamela. And there are many, many similar examples of this around the world, which, you know, people didn't realize. So if you just highlight where people have defaulted to traditional English names as a way to circumnavigate, you know, things like software and autocorrect, and, you know, the solution is really simple. You just add your name to a database and you make that database publicly available for free so anyone can do it. And what was really key for us in that was we could do that. We could phone Google and say, here's our database, add it to yours. But there was a real dignity in letting people add their own name to the database. And that's what I mentioned earlier, that we're not victims of circumstance. Like you know, Audrey, if your name was spelled, you know, unconventionally, can write your own name by adding it to this database and then using that database in whatever way, you know, you want to do, you know, to use it. So at the heart of it is, you know, it's putting the customer first, but also letting the customer put themselves first, rather than, I suppose, a lot of brand communications fall prey to this. Is, you know, they're the heroes in their own adverts, you know, and they, you know, they have a brand-centric view of the world, which is here they are to save the day. And that's not, you know, the Nando's position at all. Which is, you know, we really respect the, you know, the human dignity of taking, you know, the degree of ownership which you can over your own situation. And that was just one example of it.
Yeah, I think you guys really live your brand purpose. It seems like your brand is in the DNA of your company and your company culture.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's a, man, we're really lucky. And I've had a really, like, blessed and privileged career to work for a number of really strong brands, both South African and global. But there is something that is mercurial to Nando's in that it is, you know, it's very definitely a people-centric brand. And lots of companies will say, you know, people matter, people first. And when you have a coronavirus pandemic, like, you really could get tested. Like, is it people first or is it profit first?
Mm.
And, you know, since day one, and if you chat to, you know, our co-founder, Robbie Brosen in particular, but also Fernando Guay, they'll say things like, well, it's the people who make the chicken. And if you look after them, then they're going to cook the chicken really well. And if they cook the chicken really well, the customer's going to be really happy. And if the customer's really happy, the bank manager's going to be really happy. And I suppose a lot of business strategies or brand strategies, you know, look at the world differently. They say, well, how do we please the bank manager? And then you try find a consumer solution to that problem. As opposed to, well, if you look after the people first, particularly in service-related industries like ours, it says that the most important person in our business is the griller. And, you know, if we take care of them in really meaningful, tangible, measurable ways, which I'm happy to elaborate on, you know, on a different episode, then you have an asset which is admired not just by your customers, which, you know, Nando's is obviously a loved brand all over the world, but it's also loved internally as well. And if you have a brand that's loved internally, a lot of the devils which are, you know, plague businesses such as ours, like absenteeism or theft or, you know, bad practice, disappear. Because why would you want to harm the brand that you love so much? Because the brand really loves you as well. So, you know, marketing, you know, what worries me the most as a discipline is increasingly getting fractured from the rest of the business. It's the, you know, it becomes the communications department or the coloring department. It's often disparagingly titled. But fundamentally, marketing is, and I really believe this, in, you know, the one discipline that can drive, you know, whole businesses and therefore whole societies forward, particularly when we're faced with challenges that require creative solutions like the coronavirus has given us. And whether that's Write My Name or, you know, turning our restaurant into a drive-to instead of a drive-through because of, you know, coronavirus and therefore curbside delivery, which Darren spoke about. There are a number of ways which, you know, marketing can solve real world problems, both for the business and for its broader stakeholders. And I think the real opportunity for marketing people listening to this podcast is to really seize control of that, and don't think that your job is only to, you know, publish press releases and, you know, respond to customer queries on Twitter. It's far more important than that, and it's far bigger than that. And there's nothing, you know, there's nothing secret about it from Hernando's perspective. I think we've got the benefit of having hugely risk tolerant, you know, founders and shareholders that allow us to take risks. And therefore, you know, we enjoy the rewards associated with risk taking. But there's nothing there that isn't, you know, equally in every other brand manager's remit in any other, you know, marketing departments anywhere in the world, and especially in South Africa. And we've seen now that the world is under an enormous amount of threat and challenge. We've let the bankers run the world. We see what happened when that happened. Mm. And we've let politicians try to run the world, and we've seen the limitations of that as well. So in 2020, you know, it's a brilliant opportunity for the crazy people, the creative people, the marketing people, the advertising people, to have a bash at solving things that previous disciplines have fundamentally failed to do. And I'm really excited that I get to do that with, you know, smart people like Darren and, you know, the broader Nando's community at large. What a cool time, man. We're just getting started.
Yeah, I think this is a good opportunity this year for marketers to reinvent themselves and to understand what is their role, because they play such a pivotal role within brands and organizations that I think they've lost some of that focus due to legacy and, you know, bad perceptions and stuff. And like you rightly put it, you know, for me, there's two things that you've said that really stands out is CMOs earning a seat at the table, because very often, I mean, we've seen a trend on CMOs now, what their role is in terms of expos and boards and stuff. You know, you need to actually participate in those right conversations, and it does not necessarily revolve around profitability all the time, because the role of a marketer is to put your customer hat on and be the voice of your consumers. And then the second thing is you know, that I think marketers need to think strategically, and I don't want to use the word strategically freely, but what it means is that we need to think about the business, and it becomes our business, that we're not just advertisers, but we have a role to play in driving the business agenda, driving the business goals, and being part of this brand DNA within the organization, because it should be infused into your business at the end of the day. It's not a standalone function that's only responsible for communication.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you've raised two really interesting points, one of which is, you know, earning a seat at the table. And what's really interesting there, and I've done a lot of research into this, is that's a fairly uniquely South African challenge. If you look at, you know, major brands across the world, particularly in Europe, but also true in the States as well, is one of the most common career paths to CEO is via CMO, whereas in South Africa it tends to be via the finance department or the operations department. So it is a fairly uniquely South African challenge that the disregard for marketing is here. That said, you know, you absolutely cannot take an entitlement approach and say, well, marketers deserve to be here. No, you earn the right to be there, which means you have to consistently demonstrate the value of your function. And if the value of your function, as opposed to some marketing departments will frame it, is, you know, in fluffy, nebulous marketing vocabulary, rather than, you know, there is a return on investment case to be made for putting the customer first, to solving real world customer problems. And if you can, you know, understand that language, then you can cross those barriers with other departments, particularly the finance department or, you know, the procurement department. And I know a lot of sort of financial institutions, things like product design are left to people who are technically very competent in, you know, financial management and financial design and actuaries and the like. And that's really important, because you don't want to sell a product that's fundamentally unprofitable. But the role of the marketer often is to just go and sell that. And that doesn't work. I mean, it hasn't worked in many, many cases, because, you know, it's so utterly, you know, separated from the real world reality that many customers live in. So, yeah, I totally agree with you. We deserve a seat at the table, but it has to be earned. Mm-hmm. It absolutely has to be earned. I'm really lucky at Nana's that I get to work for previous CMOs. I mean, that has some byproducts as well. They have firm opinions on how I should do my job, and they understand it because they've done my job. But I take that, you know, that challenge, you know, most days, and I'm afforded, you know, way more freedom than perhaps I deserve. But the opportunity for us as a marketing community, and if you look at, you know, the likes of MASA and the Professional Designations Committee in particular, to try raise the standard of marketing as a business discipline rather than this distinct, often too fluffy discipline, is a real opportunity. And again, man, if not now, this is the perfect time to do it.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with saying that it should be a business discipline. Because we're part of the business. You know, Doug, I feel so passionate about marketing that we can have a whole new conversation about the role of marketing and how it's transitioning and evolving and, you know, what's going on, how we should be looking at this going forward. And I really like to pick your brain on this at another time. But in closing, What is the one thing that you want to achieve for the rest of 2020, and your key learnings from the first 6 months of this year?
Yeah, wow, what a great question. Robbie Brosnan often says this: never waste a good crisis. And man, we have a properly good crisis at the moment. And what it's forced us to do, and Darren said it far better than I'm going to, was it's fast tracked certain things that previously would have been luxury decisions that now become necessary decisions. So I think a big opportunity for us is to reconsider many of the things we do, you know, the degree to which they're useful to the world and useful to the brand and useful to the business. You can really critically evaluate that. One thing I'm very passionate about, though, is, and this is unique to marketers, they constantly want to redefine their profession. And I think, you know, there's certain elements of it that need to be redefined, but the fundamentals of what the marketing profession discipline are fairly stable and fundamental and shouldn't be questioned or challenged unnecessarily. And if we keep changing our minds as to what it is that we want to do for the world and the business and the brands that we serve, then no wonder people get confused about the value of our function. So it's a, you know, the two ends of that spectrum. You know, we need to change what needs to be changed because the crisis, you know, affords us the opportunity to do so. But at the same time, you can double down on your efforts on what makes your business work, what makes your brand different and better than other brands in the market, what, you know, consumer needs can you uniquely meet that no one else can. And if you do that, then there's, you know, an exchange of value which is inherently profitable. And I don't want people to mishear anything that we've said this morning. Of course profit matters. Without profit I wouldn't be able to do Write My Name or to feed people or to, you know, pay suppliers to, you know, develop curbside technology. So profit, of course, matters, but it's not the only goal, and often it's a byproduct of meeting other goals. So I think a firm reconsideration of all of those variables is something that we are currently underway and will continue to service.
Yeah, I think, Doug, you've left us much food for thought. Thank you so much for your time, and I really enjoyed this conversation.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Well, I'm happy to do it again.
Okay,
thank you for having us.
All right.
Darren, in closing, what is the one thing you want to achieve in 2020, considering your key learnings taken from first half of this year?
Survival. Yeah, 2020 has been the biggest curveball as I suppose anyone could have imagined. So, we're certainly not out of it yet when it comes to COVID Cyril's announcement on Sunday is, you know, true to that. So I think our focus as a business is around ensuring that every single Nando's employee around the world continues to earn a salary and to get paid the normal that we did throughout the lockdown period. And, you know, that continues to be our focus. And as we sort of start opening different channels, so dine-in recently opened as well, to get the business up and running and get back to the normal way of everyday life, which is an easy sentence to say, but very difficult to action in practice. So I think, you know, if by the end of the year, we as a business can remain strong and to Doug's point earlier around ensuring that the way we've handled the crisis lives to the values that we the company is ultimately built on. I think we'll look back on this and say that it was a crisis well used and be proud of what we did, as opposed to regretting, I suppose, knee-jerk reactions to that. So I think that's a big focus. Speaking to agility, I think the beauty of social media is that it's inherently a social platform. And so it gives us the ability to talk with people as opposed to broadcasting to them. Now, in order to do that, we listen more than what we talk about, and not interrupting people is a crucial part of that. Now, in order to do that, I think speed is crucial. And when crafting a piece of content or response or an ad, it can always get better. You know, you can always fix it. You can always improve this X, Y, Z. If you speak to an artist around a painting, you know, the painting is never done. However, what speaks to us time and time again is the importance of deploying something or going ahead with something that is 80% right, but deployed at the right time, as opposed to getting something that is 100% right, but releasing it later on when a bulk of the conversation is starting to die out. So I think that's a difficult one to get our head around, because something can always be more, can always be improved or perfect. But being okay with being good enough, I think, is a big part of that.
Yeah, I think, Darren, that's a valid statement. There's two things that stand out for me. Is one, it's the brand culture and the appetite to test and possibly fail and learn, or test and succeed with whatever you got out at that time.
Oh, man, it couldn't be more true. I mean, you know, like I said earlier, is that there's an assumption that most of what we do hits the mark. But the reality is that we fail all the time and we do things wrong all the time. And there's the saying of success is a bad teacher, and that couldn't be more true. So yeah, as long as you don't do the same thing over and over again, go ahead and do it. Have some fun.
Okay. Thank you, Darren, for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. No problem. Thank you for having us. It was fun.
We're excited. You're excited.
I really value and appreciate your support during this time,
helping decision makers navigate the change and to keep some change in their pockets.
Don't forget to subscribe, follow our Instagram handle at
TalkDigitalZA.
Engage us on our website at TalkDigitalZA.co.za.
And who knows, you could be featuring on the next one.